Okay, so we're going to do Parshas Vayechi, the last one in Bereishis, and we're going to try to tie it into today date in history, date of calendar date of Asar B'Teves, the connection between the two, and there's some big ones. So we start like this. Bodenheim's there. Parshas Vayechi starts, and Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. And the days of Yaakov, the years of his life, were 147 years. Except now, if we just know basic math, it makes sense. He was there 17 years, now he's 147. How do we know such a thing? Because earlier, in last week's parsha, Jacob and Pharaoh meet. Yaakov brought Jacob, his father, and presented to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh blessed Pharaoh. How many days are you? And he said, I am 130. So last week's parsha, he's 130. This week's parsha, he passed away at 147. It adds in the obvious detail, 17 years, because it's basic math. So if you didn't know, you're filling in the blanks. And it's a little strange because the Torah, every word is $1 billion. Like, why add in the details? Obviously, if he's passed away at 147 and he's 130 here, you don't need 17. Or just say he lived in Egypt 17 years and obviously he's 147. I mean, you don't need both. Clearly, every word telling us something. I have a wild idea. Then I saw some holy commentators say it. So what we're asking again, Stephen, is that in the first verse of this week's parsha, it states two things. So what we're asking, Stephen, on the first pasuk is this. The first pasuk says, Yaakov lived in Egypt for 17 years, and he passed away at 147. And we're saying, okay, last week's parsha, Yaakov meets Paro for the first time. And he says, how old are you? And he says, I'm 130. So last week we were told he's 130 when he reaches Egypt. So telling us he's in Egypt, either 17 years, you'll know he's 147, or you say he passed away at 147 and you'll know he was there 17 years. You don't need both to tell us this. No reason to have two markers for people that are reading Torah. Every letter is $1 billion. So approach I wanted to say, and I saw brought down, fascinatingly, I might add, very happy when I saw it, is that it could be that when Yaakov is, oh, the Torah is telling us years, it's really exact. And exact means that he died at 147. We have a Gemara we're going to get to, that righteous people pass away on their birthday. So assuming that Yaakov, at 147 years old, passed away, it's not far to say that Yaakov passed away on his birthday, like the Talmud says in many places. Okay, what about when he arrived in Egypt? What the Chumash is telling us when he said, I'm 130, 17 years to 147, is also to tell us that, by the way, he arrived in Egypt on his birthday as well. He met Paroi on his birthday. There might be one day in between here. Depends on what we're doing with it. But it means when Yaakov was standing in front of Pharaoh and saying, I'm 130 years old, when Pharaoh tells him last week, how many are the days of your years of your life? And Yaakov says, the days of years of my sojourns have been 130. Few and bad have been the days of years of my life. And the whole caboodle, that was his birthday as well. If that is an accurate statement, which I don't think is such a stretch so far in my wild idea, then we have another source, something we've discussed in the Tuesday night class many, many times, is that there is a concept on someone's Hebrew birthday that they have the power of blessing. And therefore, people go over to people at Hebrew birthdays and say, please give me a blessing. And where is a good source for this, that the power of blessing? So it could be, what we're saying is, we're not going to recap for Bodenheim, even though we love him. It could be that Yaakov is giving a blessing to Pharaoh, which was successful. As we know, the Nile rose to his feet, was Yaakov's birthday when he met Pharaoh on that day. And he said, I'm 130 years old, meant I'm 130 years old today. That's what he was adding on the details. It is my birthday. The Torah then repeats later on, by the way, how do you know this? Because he stayed in Egypt 17 years. And guess what? 17 years later, he died on his birthday because great people pass away on their birthday. That's one of the things that is a klal. As we know, they claim, you know, it's going back, they claim the Michas Chinuch. I think, Charles, you heard of that sefer? Not sure if you heard of that sefer. Born in 1800, passed away in 1873. And guess what? His birthday and his death date were the same day, 24th of Day of Elul. But that's the first idea. So the first idea we're starting is now, we want to then reverse engineer it. The first thing we're starting is that the opening verse in our parsha that discusses Yaakov being 147, and he's going to be passing away, didn't pass away the second necessarily, but to tell us, by the way, understand he reached Egypt on his birthday. He passed away on his birthday as well. So we try to figure out, let's see if we can know when Yaakov's birthday was. So there's a fascinating Talmud. Rosh Hashanah 10b. Rosh Hashanah 10b says like this. Tanya taught in a brisa. Rabbi Eliezer says, B'tishrei nivra ha'olam. The world was created in Tishrei. Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, beginning of the new year, is the birthday of the world, which we say in davening. That's not relevant for us today. Next words, important. B'tishrei, in the month of Tishrei, noldu avos. The patriarchs were born in the month of Tishrei. And by the way, fascinating, Rashi says, what do you mean, what does it mean by the patriarchs? Rashi says, Avraham and Yaakov left out Yitzchak. And the Gemara explains why he left out Yitzchak, because Yitzchak, no matter what, everyone's going to agree, was born on Pesach. Not for now. Avraham and Yaakov, Rabbi Eliezer says, born during the month of Tishrei. That's not the calendar date, but at least we're getting closer. We now have the years being lined up. He lived 147 years. Fine. We discussed in a previous class, RabbiHavna.com, why he died not at 180 years old, why he lost 33 years of his life. We gave a couple ideas. Now we're at 147 years. What month? We got the month of Tishrei. We're not finished yet. I'm skipping a couple lines here because it's not relevant for us. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua argues. Rabbi Yeshua says, B'nisan noldu avos. Avram and Yaakov, again not Yitzchak, were born in the month of Nisan. So we have a debate between two great rabbis from the Talmud. What month did the Avram and Yaakov pass away? Yitzchak is going to be proven from the Gemara to have a specific date. But Yaakov and Avram are vague. We don't now have a month. We don't have a date, specific date in the month, but we have a month. We'll discuss soon. Now, as a side to know, I think this is important to know, because we're going to show that there's potentially different dates being given now. Besides being 2 months, within the month, we might have different dates. And how does that work out? So we've discussed many times in this class. The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, which we have in front of us, begins with the words, there are four new years, and we have different new years that we have. Four new years. And what it means is that there's different years, different new years that go on. There's a year we get judged if we're going to live. There's a new year when we get judged if we're going to be successful monetarily. There's different new years going on. And we have said in this class multiple times that in America, we have different new years as well. We have the school year, as some people work for the school system. There begins September. We have the tax season. We have fantasy football season. Might be September also. I don't even know when it begins, whatever it is. So we, baseball season, we also have different New Year's. It's not such a wild idea. What about different birthdays? In America, we might not have different birthdays. Maybe. Maybe not. Jewish birthday. I'm going to go a step further and say that we have different death dates and different birth dates. So for example, in Chazal, Chasam Sofer says it multiple places, someone has a birth date based on when he comes out of the womb. That's the most famous one. There might be a birthday considering 8 days later, the bris. You would have, depending, we're not getting into politics and drama, the conceived date, if they can know such a thing. That might be considered a birthday as well, which we will see might be applicable here today. There are different birthdays as well. And death dates, sadly, and by the way, go a step further. Someone becoming alive. We have a Chazal that tells us, someone who gets a new job, who gets married, certain things, all your sins are forgiven. What is that? It could be considered. Why? Because at this point in time, you're beginning a new life. Your new job is a new life. You're getting married, it's a new life. So there is something called a new birthday. An anniversary could be considered a birthday, again, with a new thing. And sadly to say, death dates as well. Guy gets fired from his job. We know, we've discussed many times, many people die way before they physically die, based on emotional health and other types of things. Some people just get old, and God forbid, you know, their mind isn't clear anymore, sadly to say. So we have different dates as well. Of course, we don't think into it that much, but people remember these things. So we have when the Mishnah says we have four new years, we do understand that, different birthdays as well. So we have an argument here now in the Gemara. The Gemara has an argument if Avraham and Yaakov were born, and therefore we're adding on died, because we believe that righteous people born and died the same day. People born and died, were they born and died in the month of Nisan, or were they born and died in the month of Tishrei? And we're saying that whatever it's going to be, it's going to fit into this week's parasha, because it says Yaakov died at 147. Yaakov came to Egypt at 130, was on his birthday. It's either in these months. So now what are the dates? Can we narrow it down? Avraham Avinu is a whole different section. Let's go to Yaakov. There's a fascinating concept brought down. No open Talmudic passages, but the grand rabbis were going now. Chassam Sofer is a big one on this. He died in 1840. Rav Yaakov Emden is much earlier. They find sources and gematrias. It's mind-blowing. And to show off.
I heard a good one today by your father.
Yeah, I was doing it with him this morning. Well, yeah, I know. Yeah, don't say we're doing it now. Correct. I prepared some of this class for my father. So there is a, my father only did some of it. I don't know what he did, but we prepared it together. There is a tradition that Yaakov Avinu passed away, and therefore, I'm going to add to it because this is my father didn't say, passed away and was born on the first day of Sukkot. First day of Sukkot. And that's a tradition, not the only one, but that's one of them. Then the Chumash says in this week's parasha that what happened after Yaakov passed away? How was he treated? So it says he was mourned by all of Egypt, right? And it says here, where's that pasuk? How many days it says? Do you remember that? Here it is. 53, 50:3. His 40-day term was completed. For such is a term of embalmment. That were embalmment with an L. And the Egyptian bewailed him for 70 days. There was a set, now 99%, not all, never. 99% of the interpretations mean that there were 70 days. Within those 70 days, there was a 40-day embalmment and 30 days crying. Let's see if Rashi says it openly.
50, 3. What is that referring to?
Oh, chapter 50, verse 3. Let me see if it says these words here. No. Okay. So some say, there's the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says, I don't know if he said this part. If you count 70 days from the death, which now we're saying is in Tishrei, according to one, we're going to say it's the first day of Sukkot, the 15th day of Tishrei. If you count 70 days, you are now in Chanukah. And the Chassam Sofer says, that's why Chanukah is called Yimei Simcha. There's a certain, even though we don't celebrate it like a holiday biblically, of no work and these type of things, because in the end, it was a day that Yaakov Avinu was buried. Therefore, we take a little bit away from it. Chassam Sofer says, but he's not finished yet, the Chassam Sofer. He adds on that you have to travel to Egypt. He shows in the Talmud where it says it was a 6-day travel to Egypt. And it says that Yosef took on an extra 7 days. Talmud says here, when 70 days was up, and then it says Yosef went to bury his father and his servants, and it says he kept an extra 70 days. 7 days. Hold on. In verse 10, and he ordained a 7-day mourning period for his father. So we have 70 plus potentially 6, plus potentially 7. The Chassam Sofer said that comes out to today's date, 10th of Tevis. The 10th of Tevis, one of the reasons we fast is because Yaakov was buried at that time. So we start this week's parasha. Yaakov died. So he died on his birthday. His birthday is the first day of Sukkot. End of the parasha adds on 77 days. We're now on Asar B'Tevis. But when my father, that's all he said?
That's what he said.
Here goes an extra detail. Unbelievable. It goes in reverse. The brilliance of everything in life, how it works out. So Yaakov had 1 day of death, physically dying, first day of Sukkot. But he had an actual burial, which is another step in the process, which will be Asar B'Tevis. What about in the birthing process? It says by Yaakov's birth, fascinating. The Torah adds on that, by the way, Rivka, if you remember, there were two sets of twins that were born in Bereshit. There was Yehuda's wife, had the two Peretz and, slipped my mind right now, and then the other one was Yaakov and Esav. By Yaakov and Esav, Zerach and Peretz, yes. But by Toldos, Rashi says, which the Chumash says, when it says that she gave birth, look what it says, in the beginning, hold on, we're going back to the beginning of Yaakov's birth, which we said is the same day as his death, and it says, Vayimlu Yemei Loledes, when her term to bear grew full. We're in Toldos 25:24. Let me see if Rashi says it, or they say it here. 25:24. I don't say it. Okay. Rashi says, by Tamar, it says, when it came time for her to give birth. 38:27. Let me just tell you the words. You'll see the difference here. 38:27. Hold on. 38:20 says, and it came to pass at the time she gave birth. So here it says, when her term to bear grew full, here it says, and it came to pass at the time she gave birth. What's the difference in the phrase? Both to be merits. So Rashi explains early sources that she, Tamar, when it only says, and it came to pass at that time, was a 7th month. Premies, good word. And she was full. And when her term to bear grew full term, Yaakov and Esav were born full term babies, which we know in legend, Medrashim, Esav was fully formed. Full here, the whole thing. 9 months. Let's do reverse. If someone is born on the first day of Sukkot, how long is a pregnancy for? Pregnancy is about 270 something days, right? Correct. 9 month time to be about 200 something. The Talmud says it's the word for pregnancy. Uber, Reishayin, something like that. It spells the word pregnancy numerically equals 276. And officially, pregnancy days are 276. Fascinating detail. The Gemara says it. A lady who's pregnant, the word pregnant equals 276 days. A full-term pregnancy. There are preemies. We're not counting preemies. If you go from the first day of Sukkot back 276 days, you come out Asar B'Tevis, which means the brilliance. Yaakov and Esav were conceived around the 10th of Tevis. We believe as Jews, there is some type of life begins at conception, not getting into politics and drama and all that stuff. We don't need people dancing outside here. But we believe in conception is a form. And he actually came out on Yom Sukkot. So his birthday in American would be first day of Sukkot. But on some level, there's a spiritual birthday on conception. And reverse, he has two death dates as well. He physically died, first day of Sukkot, counteracts the physical birth. Physical death, physical birth, same day, first day of Sukkot. And he's buried, 77 plus 13, on Asar B'Tevis, today's date, which was the day he was conceived. Because conception, birth, equals potentially, most of the time, we bury people the same day they pass away or as soon as possible. But not always. Back then, it took an amount of time to travel there. If you're embalming, it takes an amount of time to travel. So it becomes a long process. But you see how the dates start working out. So according to this interpretation, Yaakov born and passed away the first day of Sukkot. First day of Sukkot. And it ties into Hanukkah, and it ties into what he called. Let's say Pesach. What about, that's only according to one rabbi. One rabbi in the Gemara here said that there's an argument in the Talmud, when did Avram and Yaakov, not Yitzchak, when did Avram and Yaakov, when did they die and when they were born? We're going born, same thing. Was it Tishrei, which will be Sukkot, 15th day of Sukkot, or whether it's Pesach? Nisan. Again, now, by the way, just to add on to Sukkot, by the way, I should have said this before, that it says Yaakov traveled to Sukkot. The first time the word Sukkah is mentioned in the Talmud, in the Chumash, is in Parshas Vayishlach, when he went away from Esav, and it said he traveled to Sukkot.
Because that's where he built huts for his livestock.
Correct. But someone to say that the traveling to Sukkot is because he traveled on Sukkot, meant he entered a new realm. You have a good word sometimes. He traveled from this domain until the next domain. Yes, the Torah is writing that he traveled on Sukkot. To Sukkot meant, yes, he was going to Sukkot at that time when he was alive. But there's also a secondary hint to the Pasuk, with this piece of paper, that when he traveled to Sukkot meant he was changing realms at the time of Sukkot. What's amazing is, here it is, when it says that Yaakov passed away, I wrote this down because I was blown away. Look how Yaakov passed away in Parshas Nun, Perek Nun, Perek 50. Torah adds on details. It says, look how Yaakov passed away. The last pasuk in 49, chapter 49. When Yaakov finished instructing his sons, he drew his feet onto his bed. He expired and was gathered into his people. He drew his feet onto his bed. Sounds like a. I wonder if Oscar says something. Let's just once we're here. 33. No, nothing. It's an odd phrase. The phrase, only grand rabbis. We're not doing it spread out, but look it up. The phrase of these words of in Hebrew that says, Vayesef Raglav Elamita, 4 words in English, Lamor, he drew his feet onto the bed, numerically equals the holiday of Sukkot. Because again, we're saying that this occurred on Sukkot, the physical first stage of his death. Now, by the way, we had with Yitzhak a few weeks ago, we discussed it in the class. Someone goes blind, sadly, that's a form of death. So there are, again, there are other potential death dates and birth dates. But we're going here right now. Yaakov switched, what's the word they have? Transitioned. I think that's the word people use, right? He transitioned on Sukkot when he was born on Sukkot. Because there is something to that as well. And you start looking through, fascinatingly, the Torah, Son of the Rosh, 1300s, has a famous concept. And this concept alone, you could write five volumes. Easy, five volumes of what it means. The Torah quotes his brother. Not always, because my brother told me that the three patriarchs, represent the three Shalosh Regalim, the three main highways, main holidays. And it goes in order. Argument, but he says it goes in order. Pesach represents Avram. Just as a side thing, do you remember what it says by Avram? He baked matzahs.
That was based on the guest phone.
When the guests come, Yitzchak represents Shavuos, easy interpretation. The horn, Talmud says that on the animal that was substituted for Yitzchak at the Akedah was a horn that was sounded at Sinai. One of the horns, but okay, there are other reasons as well. And Yaakov represents Sukkos. So easy, Yaakov represents Sukkos. You know why? Because he built, what was the word, a pen for his animals.
Sukkos, he said.
Yaakov says the word Sukkos. Do you think in a person's lifetime, I've said this many times, I want to say this right now. If since you pass away, God forbid you, when someone, start over, when someone passes away and you go to a funeral and someone gets up there and says, he loved the Mets, he loved the Yankees, that person failed his life. That's all they can say about you after 75 years. You were a good swimmer, you loved the Yankees. You failed on two reasons. You failed, first of all, because that's all they had to say about you. And you failed because you have someone who's actually going to say that about you. That's your friend, the guy who doesn't really speak something good about you. Maybe not. But okay. But it goes like this. So Yaakov is represented by Sukkos. Why? Because when he's going and traveling, he put his animals in a pen. Oh, Yaakov, with the animals. Yeah, you're Sukkos. I don't know. Is that the eulogy you want at 120? Yaakov, you represent Sukkos because you built tents for your animals.
The Torah wouldn't have said it unless it was in
Well, again, there's major words to it. According to what we're saying now, of course Yaakov represents Sukkos. He was born and passed away on Sukkos. He was integral to that. That's his holiday. It's very serious. So
Why isn't the first Ishbizim?
the Spiesen, did we ever speak about that here? The
Well, you
Spiesen.
should be, they do it out of order. You could be the first.
Right.
Different thing.
Yes. The Spiesen is a whole different thing. Correct. And if it's out of order or not, it's a whole big thing as well. Okay. So we have here now what we've come up with so far. Yaakov born passed away on first day of Sukkot, came to Egypt, finished the embalming mourning process for some people, Hanukkah. Then there was an extra process and a traveling process, Aser B'Teves, which, as we said, mirrors his two lifetimes as well. Fine. Now it says, unbelievable. Why was Yaakov sent 70 days traveling? Why don't you bury him?
He's going to go for embalming,
Embalming
not
and
traveling. He's probably staying at
traveling was
home.
a, no, I meant the traveling after they went to Israel. They buried him. Right.
And that takes a while to
Correct?
go.
Yes, we said that. But the question is, Rashi quotes the reasons why Yaakov requested to go away. One was, we spoke about this a couple of years ago, rabbihovner.com, if the plagues affected the Jews. We had 2 weeks on that. Here it says, Yaakov said, listen, I know there's going to be a plague of lice, and I don't want the lice with me, and therefore get me out. Feeling that his death was drawing near, Yaakov asked, sent for Yosef and asked Yosef to swear that he would bring him there to Israel. He had several reasons. This is Rashi. Number one, he knew that the soil of Egypt would one day be plagued with Kenim, which would have swarmed beneath his body. So we discussed this years ago on rabbihovner.com. Do the plagues affect the Jews? Next one. Those who are buried outside of Eretz Yisrael will not come to life in the resurrection until they royal roll through Eretz Yisrael. That's a different rabbihovner.com speech, by the way. And he did not want the Egyptians to make him into a tomb and a shrine of idol worship. Tomb. That's what it says. Three reasons. We discussed this class many times. Sometimes you have to go to the sources. Here it says Rashi. But you look at the Rashi, it says where it is. This Rashi is a Medrash. But there's something mind-blowing. The Medrash doesn't give three reasons. Medrash gives four reasons. It's very odd that Rashi would quote three out of four.
Got one.
Very odd.
Rashi, do you think knew all the Red Russian?
Good point, though. Good point. But yes. So let's go and see what Rashi left out and figure it out. And the Medrash just says that Yaakov was afraid that had he been buried in Egypt, we're going to have two interpretations, had he been buried in Egypt, the Egyptians would have had a merit in their scale that the Jews would have never got out of Egypt. That's a real reason. Life sounds personal. Idol worship, okay. You don't want to roll, okay. It's not about me. It's about everybody else. What does it mean? Two interpretations by the early commentators. One say that if the Egyptians were going to help in the burial process, they would gain certain merits. And one says, no, like we believe today when we travel to cemeteries. A grand rabbi buried in a certain location has an advantage for the location. We know today in Europe, as I've traveled there many times, it's an amazing thing. When you go to the town like Sanz and Dinev and Shinev, all these Yiddish names, those towns are built up. They're nice. They're this. And you go to the other town, 50 kilometers away, and they're living like in World War II. Bath, no indoor plumbing. You drive, as you're driving, you're going from third world countries to first world countries. And almost always, the first world countries are where the rabbis are buried. Practically speaking, it's very simple. Because the religious Jews are paying for that cemetery. They're paying for a house to have a mikvah. They're paying for food to be there. You go into Sanz 24 hours a day, there's food there. You go into Rupshitz, it's amazing. You go into Lancet, go Google Lancet. I went there even 10 years ago, they didn't have it. 5 years ago, they did. A full house, 50 beds, mikvah, showers, full stock. Full, like this, like a bookcase this size of food. Of cake, those soups that you pour the hot water into it. Noodle soup cup. I was there, I couldn't believe it, because when I had been there 10, 15 years ago, they didn't have this stuff. So now, you can say on a very simple level, practically speaking, yeah, of course, because physically, the Jews want the money, yeah, the whole thing. But it's God set it up this way. There's a God behind this. We say when the Jews left Egypt, they took everything with them. That means where there is a grand rabbi still there, there's prosperity. Prosperity. I was in Lublin one time, 17 tour buses were there. The yeshiva that the Nazis didn't destroy. Had they destroyed it? 17 tour buses in one day. How much money that brings into the economy? I don't know if the Poles do anything else. They bring in Jews and make money. We'll have to take that out, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so it says here that had Yaakov remained in Egypt, he's not saying monetarily, they would have had a merit because they would have helped build him. They would have helped bury him. Help bury him, they would get the merit. Or it says, not that they would have helped, but that he would be there. The difference between the two reasons would be, let's say the Jews would have told, the children of Yaakov would have said, we're doing everything. If we did everything and the merit is the act of doing it, then the Egyptians would have lost out. If it's you're buried in that land that helps, then they would have gained the merit. What is the merit? The act of helping out the deceased, going through the proper burial, digging up the grave in the cold weather, whatever it is, or is it that the body is there? That's a side thing. The difference would be if the Jews would have done it. Good reason. Why'd Rashi leave it out?
And all the, we know that Yosef was left. We know that Yosef.
Abahabna.com, where I was put into the, yes.
And there's 2 minutes. What are all the other brothers?
They went up with the bones of Yosef post.
They also took out. So they were buried
absolutely
in Egypt. And then they
yes. Open post. So come hint at it. Yes. Here it says, Yaakov, and he passed away. Yosef ordered the Egyptian, in order the physicians to help out. That says here now, his 40-day term was completed, and Egypt bewailed him for 70 days. And you know what it says here? Because the Egyptians bewailed Yaakov for 70 days, they gained 70 major days of merit. That's what it says, 70 days of merit. So the reason why Rashi's not quoting it, according to me, is because Yaakov had a good plan, but it didn't work out in the end. Yaakov saying, don't bury me because of lice. Don't bury me because the Egyptians might gain something. They outsmarted him. I can't use that phrase. But they did help out because in the end, the Egyptians bewailed for 70 days.
We can listen to Tolkien.
Excellent. That's going to be Thursday night's class. Don't worry. The godless is.
What
the beauty is. Why did the Egyptians bewail Yaakov, does article say? No. One of the basic interpretations is, When Yaakov arrived, we started this week's parsha. We started this week's class. Yaakov arrived, went to Pharaoh on his birthday, gave him a blessing. And the Nile rose up. And you know what also happened? Famine stopped. The Egyptians had a certain sense of selfish gratitude. They didn't really love Yaakov. No, they loved what Yaakov brought to the economy. Water. Girl, 100%. When the Jews are crying over the death of a righteous person, it's a different crying. It's not about what I gained, hopefully. Hopefully, it's a more spiritual type of eulogy. They were crying over the wrong reasons, and they gained 70 days. One interpretation is because how did the plagues work out? 3 weeks of pain with a week of warning beforehand, sometimes. Depends how you learn it. Week of warning times how many plagues were there again? 10, 10 times 7? 70 days. 7 days of reprieve. The Egyptians were supposed to be punished much more by the plagues, but God said, you know what? 70 days, we're going to pay him back 70 days. Not the second, but it's there. And this teaches us a major valuable lesson. First of all, you do something right, even for the wrong reasons, you're gaining big time. Maybe not the second, but you're gaining big time. 200 years down the road, God's going to help you out. For the wrong reasons, imagine you do something for the right reasons. If you do something for the right reasons, the immense amount of merits that you gain can't even count them. The evil Egyptians, who were not even nice in this story, if you go through the story at length, still benefited. We can benefit from things. It also means when you're trying to do something, just do it anyway. Even if you're not perfect, you'll still benefit. Even if you do it for the wrong reasons, you benefit. The second thing we have to know is that we discussed as well, don't be one of those guys who's dying 50 deaths. Don't be one of those guys who's depressed and he loses some life. Go the guy who's doing 50 lives. We have 50 lives. Get met when a guy gets married, loses all his sins. Why? A new life begins. Gets a better job. There are ways, I would say, when you learn something and you're enthralled in Torah, and you say, "Wow, that was unbelievable."
See him.
Make a siyum, 100%. But even without that, when you're learning Torah and you're attaching yourself to godliness, and you feel unbelievable about yourself.
Someone say it.
Extra soul every Shabbos. The idea is to recognize that we ourselves have many lives. Yes, there's the one physical. There's one. Yaakov had one sukkah, but he also had a Sar B'Tavis. He also had when he came to Egypt. He also had, there's a million things. And to recognize that every day we can make into a brand new life. A brand new life. There are questions if when you get up every morning, you should say, Shachianu. First, you died, then you came back. That means on some level, every day is a brand new life. Seize the moment. Have a great night.